Hello, I'm Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to today's programme in this series, entitled The Artifact. Over the next few weeks, I shall be speaking to some of Malta's professional archaeologists about archaeology in general and about the many fascinating projects that are in progress or planned for the future. Today's guest is Ms. Vanessa Chantar. Vanessa graduated in archaeology at the University of Malta in 2002. She then worked as assistant project manager of the Iconos project at the Malta Centre for Restoration, as it was then. And then Heritage Malta took it over, and she transferred to the National Museum of Archaeology, where she has been for the last 6 months. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Well, today we're going to talk about the catacomb site of Abatia Tadeir. And I must say that that site is very close to my heart. I have a real passion for catacombs. Not shared, I must say, by all my friends. When I start talking about catacombs, sometimes their eyes glaze over and they can't quite understand my enthusiasm. But you will, of course, understand it, won't you, Vanessa? Yes. So, the site of Abatia Tadeir at Rabat. Perhaps you could give us a little bit of a general introduction to the site.
As you said, the site is found in Rabat, and this area is particularly rich in catacombs, dating as the earliest dates of which are the 4th century AD. However, this particular site is at the latest phase of this period. It is, in fact, has been dug between the phase between when burials were getting transferred from below ground to the above ground. Well, Abatia Tadeir consists of four hypogea, which are dug next to each other. The biggest one is Hypogeum 1. I mean, this has been nicknamed Hypogeum 1, isn't it?
Of course.
And this Hypogeum, apart being from the largest one, is also the one which is most richly decorated. It is the one where we find fragments of paints. For example, there's the remains, only remains, unfortunately, we have, of a painting of the Archangel Michael. And there are also a couple of remains of red paint of two possible saints in a Siculo-Byzantinesque style. Also, it has some 8 Greek and Latin crosses incised in various parts of the catacombs. As regards to size, it is, as I already said, the biggest. It is accessed by going down 3 steps from the forecourt, and you have a main entrance, which then leads to a bigger hall, which has about 16 baldacchino tombs. Now, for those who don't know, baldacchino tombs have a rock-cut platform with a canopy. Four pillars at the corners of each go up to form a canopy. These are perhaps the most elaborate of these tombs, and the most beautiful as well. Apart from these kind of baldacchino tombs, at Hypogeum 1, there are also found a couple of child arcosolia. Now, these arcosolia are a niche is dug into the face of the wall, and at the bottom of this niche there is a trench where the body was laid down and buried. Another important aspect of this hypogeum is that a chapel has also been found within it. It is a very small chapel, basically one room. It is supported with a rock pillar in the middle, and it has also a couple of benches on the side. The importance of this chapel lies that in it was found a fresco of the crucifixion scene. There's the Christ, obviously, on the cross with the Madonna and
St. John, and I imagine, perhaps the Archangel, on the other side.
And Gabriel on the other side. Well, apart from this, there are 3 other hypogeum, all very small. Hypogeum 2 consists of a couple of lethargic niches. As I said, they are a niche dug into the rock with a trench in the base of it where the body was buried. And then there is Hypogeum 3, which, like Hypogeum 1, it is ascended by going down a couple of steps. Now, the importance of this hypogeum is that it has a nagape room. Now, this room was used, it is thought at least, to have been used for burials regarding the dead, where they used to have a little feast to celebrate, commemorate the passage from one this life to the next. Apart from the agape room, there is the exedra, which is the table with the seat incorporated in one. And in this particular hypogeum, the burials were, some of the burials, the tombs were dug into this etc. So this was just another use, I imagine, for space, to save space. And there's also Hypogeum 4. Now, this particular Hypogeum was dug through a shaft. There was a shaft which for the Punico finishing burials. And it was dug in the shaft, as I already said, and conducts to a passageway. And it also has a triclinium, which is like an agape table, with a bit more complicated. And this Hypogeum has also a couple of window tombs where the burials were done.
I think there are also, if I remember rightly, some very nice decoration in the ceilings of the baldacchini.
Yes, as Hypogeum 1, in fact, has one of the most fantastic decorations imaginable. Scallop shell decorations, which are very, very well carved. Mm-hmm. And the Chiron monogram is also very present. The Chiron monogram being the Greek letters X and B, which are the initials for the word Christ. Mm-hmm. And there are also the fish scallop shell decorations, all decorations which associate Christian burial rites to these catacombs.
Mm-hmm. And is it likely that the catacomb itself was sort of reused over the centuries or not?
Well, there is that possibility, yes. Mm-hmm. Originally, the catacomb was a burial ground for the Phoenicians and the Punic.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Especially Hypogeum 1 has shafts already present, which were mm-hmm. used for the Phoenician and Punic burials. It is very common. In fact, most of archaeological sites have been reused and reused for various reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were placed in the most advantageous places possible. So
recycling is not a new art.
Not at all.
And do we know when this catacomb site was actually first sort of discovered, really?
Well, in 1926, the government acquired the site. And in October of the same year, excavation started, as usual, by Certa Mesamic, which practically excavated half of Malta. And the excavations were carried out over the first 2 years. And then there was a little break due to lack of funds.
And what's new?
And then Sir Upton Way redid the excavations. Unfortunately, during the excavation, it was found that the graves were boneless. There were no human remains. Artifacts were very little. Some pieces of marble were still found attached to the Baldacchino tombs. Certa Mesamic hypothesized that the graves were probably covered with marble. But excavations stopped there. Mm-hmm. There was a further excavation in 1933, between 1933 and 1934, once again by Sir Upton Way. However, the only reference of which we have are through the museum annual reports, with a very brief paragraph that says that some coloured mosaics, red, yellow and black, were discovered in the forecourt with a couple of limestone columns. But the only evidence of which we have, unfortunately, is in the photographic archive.
Oh. Yes, I think it's important to understand that most of the catacombs were actually rifled in antiquity, as the expression goes, and sometimes I understand with the complicity of the knights or whoever, they were hoping to find who knows what within the tombs, and people were given actually permission to search for them and sort of share out the goodies if they found any.
Yep, exactly. It was a very common practice. Mm-hmm. In fact, most of the catacombs they're not very rich in artifacts.
Mm-hmm. And the new project which you're working on now, which you've been working on, when did that initiate?
Well, the project started in November of last year. It is a collaboration project between Dean Lartelva and Heritage Malta, and it aims to rehabilitate the site. We have four aims: that of conservation. Considering that this is a unique site, a really unique site, it is important to preserve it. And then there is the making it accessible to everyone, for everyone to enjoy. And the rehabilitation, that of making it once again a part of the cultural heritage, which is available to everyone. And the management of the site, in that since it has been excavated once and never really, really studied, by rehabilitating the site and making it available to scholars, to academics, to whoever wants to go, it will hopefully initiate more investigation and more research.
In fact, it is amazing how much work can be done, even on a site like that, which actually has really been sort of mutilated, even, unfortunately, in some cases. It is amazing what one can still learn from a site like that.
Yeah, the site, unfortunately, has been vandalized times and times again. I mean, there was just a small barrier, a rubble wall, practically, which did not even act as a barrier to vandals. It was just delineating the site. And Hypogeum 1 had a grate, which kind of protected it from the from vandals, but the rest of the catacombs have been vandalized. I mean, the graffiti are found, it's dirty, it has been... It was, well, not the best preserved of site.
No.
However... We've already started. The site has been cleaned and a new wall, perimetry wall, will be erected to protect the site. Conservation studies are being held. I mean, conservators from Heritage Malta have gone on site and are currently conducting a preliminary condition report to see what the site actually needs before opening it to the public. We want to know how many people the site can take. Because it is a kind of... It is a hypogeum, and like the hypogeum of Paula, it's a very fragile site, considering it has been buried and not used to people. The stability in which it was buried and reserved will be destroyed. I mean,
just a quick reminder for those of you who might only just have joined us: this is The Artifact, and I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I'm talking to Vanessa Chantar, Heritage Malta. And she's talking about the catacomb site of Abatia Tadzeir in Rabat. In fact, Vanessa, talking of accessibility, I went on a recent trip to Libya, and I was interested to see that their catacomb sites as well were unfortunately not very well looked after in most cases, and had the same sort of damage and the same sort of difficulties that Abatia Tadzeir had. And Abatia Tadzeir has the disadvantage in that it is so accessible from the road, isn't it?
I mean, the site is situated in a village, and I mean, it is surrounded by houses. And as I already said, the perimeter wall is very low. And it is accessible. I mean, some of the hypogeums are closed, but
So why is the site closed now? I mean, what are the reasons for closing it down? What are you actually sort of trying to achieve now?
As already said, we're trying to make it more accessible to the public. We want to make we have two aims: make the site accessible, but at the same time preserve it for future generations. I mean, it is important that everyone sees the site. I mean, after all, it is our cultural heritage, our inheritance from the past. But preservation and conservation are just as important. I mean, you can't destroy everything just for our enjoyment.
Definitely.
We have to think of the future as well.
Yes, definitely. And what about sort of plans of Heritage Malta and Dean Lart Helwan? I'd like you perhaps to tell our listeners a little bit about this cooperation between the two institutions.
This cooperation is a new one. Both Heritage Malta and Dean Lart Helwan, which is a non-governmental organization, have decided to join. And the site was chosen due to its unique heritage value. I mean, the value of the site is, apart from having the painting of the crucifixion, which I just mentioned, is probably the earliest surviving painting we have. And it has been taken away from the site in 1980. Some specialists from ICROM, which is a very important conservation and conservation organization from Rome, have come over to study the site. And they've decided that due to the very bad preservation and the environmental condition of the site and the fact that it was not well protected, it was better that the site, although conservation institutes usually encouraged, it was better for the preservation of this painting to be removed. And it can now be viewed at the Fine Arts Museum in Valletta. So that is one thing. Another important value of the site is that the remains of a possible church have been found in the forecourt, which would give evidence that built churches were just have just as such an old tradition as underground churches have.
Mm-hmm.
These are all important values, and considering the uniqueness of the site and considering how much cultural tourism is very important nowadays, it will be integrated with the rest of the cultural traits that make part of this area.
Mm-hmm. In fact, and I mean, the whole area is
quite rich, considering
very rich.
St. Paul's Catacombs, Domus Romana, Villena Palace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a very rich area, and it will make it will be just one more jewel.
Yes,
to the
absolutely.
Rest.
In fact, the catacomb sites are really, as you say, sort of unique sites for Malta, because that type of catacomb is not found anywhere else. I mean, we talk about the Roman catacombs, of course, are extremely important in their own particular context. But the kind of elaborate rock cut art that we have, and it is really an art when you look at it, is really quite tremendous and very particular to the island. I know that whenever I've had occasion to take people to the catacombs, they're always very very impressed by the diversity of the catacomb sites themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that is something that perhaps, you know, people don't understand immediately just how important those catacomb sites are in this Maltese context. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the plans, though, for the future. I mean, or also what in particular is being done at the moment. What kind of conservation is going on within the site itself?
Well, future plans as depend a lot on the outcome of the condition preliminary report.
Mm.
Very much. I mean, there are plans are there to make it accessible as much as possible. But however, it's the conservation report that will tell us if the site can take, for example, like the hypogeum, 10 people in an hour or much more.
Mm-hmm.
So the extent of the project depends on how healthy, in a way, for want of a better word, the site is. Currently, we are working on this preliminary report, and surveys are being carried out. And very important, we've involved a lot the local community. I mean, a site does not exist in isolation. So the locals have been contacted. They've been informed about what's going on. And if they have any suggestions or whatever, it is very much welcomed. And I'm very pleased to say that we have had quite a positive feedback. I mean, people have written, they've called. They're very interested in the site. And that is quite encouraging, because if the locals feel that the site is their own, they will, if something is your own, you take care of it.
Absolutely. Yes, this stakeholders idea is certainly an important one. I was talking to the person who is looking after the Roman baths site, Maria Elena Zamid. And she, in that context, she was also mentioning the fact that they had contacted the people who actually live in the area, because, of course, it is important, and importance now very much is being given to the idea of a site within the landscape of the area. And a lot of work is being done by archaeologists now with this sort of viewpoint in mind. Because before, perhaps, there was the tendency to look at sites in isolation. You know, you've got your Neolithic temple, or you've got your catacomb site, or you've got your Roman villa. But nowadays, the idea is, I think, much more to look at it.
In its context.
In its context.
I mean, and even if should vandals go there, I mean, and the locals here, if they feel the site is their own, I mean, alarm might be raised much more quicker.
Sure. And in fact, that has always been the problem. I mean, there have been some sites which were really very well-kept secrets. I mean, the hypogeum
exactly
is a case in point. Or in particular, if we're going to talk about catacomb sites, the site at Charolles, underneath the Charolles windmill. At Zurich, because that is a fascinating site.
Yes, which it's very well preserved.
Very well preserved, except that service trenches have been cut straight through it.
Through the catacombs.
And of course, that sort of thing will simply not happen, I think, anymore. I think you'll agree that with the local councils getting involved.
Yep. We've contacted the local council of Rabat, and the mayor has been very helpful. Mm. I mean, the response we've had is very encouraging. And it leads us to think that finally, maybe, we are starting to be aware of our cultural heritage and to take care of it more.
Yes. I think this is something that has to grow. I mean, it is a sort of cultural thing. I think it is happening, although it's taking longer than obviously the people who are involved in the things would like it to happen. Are there going to be other projects of this nature? Have you got something else up your sleeve, or are you totally dedicated to this project at the moment?
Well, we have loads of projects. We're loaded, dying, buried
under the weight of them all.
Under the weight, exactly. But it's exciting. It's nice. It's what we wanted to do ultimately.
Yes.
So it's
and I think that Heritage Malta has really taken on board this idea of the project based development, because I mean, I've come across this time and time again that, you know, people, you are particularly involved in a project and you sort of see it from its infancy through the development stage until you produce the finished product, which is obviously never finished, because the projects of that nature are going to be dynamic. Uh-huh.
They keep cropping up
and improvements keep coming up. Yeah. And technology changes and this sort of thing, but basically you're seeing it through from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, we try to provide as much a holistic experience as possible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, not just the visual part. I mean, all right, the site is beautiful, mm-hmm. but to provide the knowledge, and we try to make people appreciate our mm-hmm. cultural heritage. Mm-hmm. That is one of our main aims, to provide a holistic experience. And also we are trying to make the site as accessible as possible to everyone, including the physically impaired. Mm-hmm. However, in this particular site, Abatsia today, this is a bit limited, because the site in itself...
lots of narrow corridors.
Narrow corridor mm-hmm. steps. The access to it and the going around limits...
You'll have to really use your imagination.
Yes, trying to come up with a solution. Uh-huh, uh-huh. However, we... Like, for example, the Domus Romana, we're trying to make sites accessible even to the visually impaired with braille cards, mm-hmm. or to the hearing impaired.
Yes,
and
uh-huh.
we're trying to make the museums and sites more interactive, mm-hmm. even for children or for people who are illiterate. Try to make the information panels more visual. More mm-hmm. more easily read.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is one of the things I was talking about with another of my guests. The difficulty of pitching the information. You know, where are you going to pitch it? Because you've got such a generalised audience coming to see a site like Abatsia today. But I think that new technologies, I mean, if they sort of one really good thing to offer is that you can actually, with new technologies, offer different levels of information.
Yes, we do our best to make the sites accessible and mm-hmm. interesting to every level of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Make it interesting to the academic and to the layperson.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that that you'll be able to come to some kind of a compromise between the needs of the site, which are extremely important, and obviously, you know, you can't have hundreds of people wandering all over them. No. At one time, mm-hmm. but also to be able to offer a beautiful site like that to the general public.
Yeah. That is our main aim. I mean, mm-hmm. if all all interventions will be non-invasive.
Uh-huh.
So that if another new method or technology is invented, we can just take mm-hmm. everything off and leave the site as it was.
Uh-huh. That brings us to the end of today's programme. I'd like to thank Vanessa Chantar for coming in to tell us about the Abatea Tadeu project. Until next time, this is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.